I too would like to join with Tim, who made the opening announcements, in welcoming those who have chosen to come and grace us with your presence as visitors this morning. We do invite you to come back tonight at 5 o'clock. We again will worship God. I might say a word to those of us who are members here. You know, seem like we've been kind of falling off at 5 o'clock of late, and I think we can do a little bit better than that. It's still the same God, whether we're here at 10 o'clock or whether we're here at 5 o'clock. So let's join back tonight as we gather again to worship God. It's good to be back from Fort Smith, Arkansas. So then I rode there for a few days in a gospel meeting with Park Hill Church. Good congregation over there. Brother Brian Lockmiller, who is originally from New Albany, Indiana, is the preacher there. Doing a good work. He and his wife Cindy. They have three fine elders, and it just seems like things are going well in that congregation. I was glad to be a part of it for just a few days. Some are asking me, were there any visible results? No, but the gospel was preached, and we'll just trust God to give the increase. And so, but it's good to be back. Man, I tell you, that's a 10-hour drive, and that's a long way from somebody our age to try to make it in one day, but we did. But it's glad to be back here, joining again with the work that's going on here. And by the way, you know, listening to the announcements this morning of the number of teachers that we need for the upcoming trimester, you know, folks, we're just right around the corner on that. And I'll be glad to take one of the smaller classes if somebody will step in and teach with Mike in the auditorium class on the Book of Revelation. If you want to trade with me, well, I'll do that. But if not, go ahead and volunteer for something. We'll fill those classes. Want to direct you back to 1 Peter chapter 3. That's going to serve as our text. And we're really going to focus in upon verse number 7, 1 Peter 3. The verse kind of begins interestingly enough. It says, "Husbands, likewise." And, you know, this is after he had just given some responsibilities to some wives or some women. And he's telling women how they ought to conduct themselves and how they ought to be. He said, matter of fact, he said that if you'll watch yourself and you're pure in your demeanor and you're pure in your conduct, and you're not focusing just merely upon the outward appearance, that you're doing something with the heart. You're doing something with the internal man or the internal person. That which cannot be seen. If you have a meek and a quiet spirit, he said, you know, this is going to redound to a lot of benefits. And number one, if your husband happens not to be a believer, bit by that, you know, there's a good possibility that he can be won to the Lord by your behavior, by your chaste conduct. He said in verse 4 to women, let it be the hidden person of the heart, which is incorruptible beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is very precious in the sight of God. Now, I know that sort of flies in the face of modern concept of womanhood, you know, sort of like a wonder woman, a super woman, a dynamic woman who is able to just do about anything and everything that a man is able to do. He said, but you know, really, in the sight of God, he said, the precious thing is a woman who is meek and she's gentle and she's quiet. And she just is the kind of woman that God intended for a woman to be. He said, in this way, it makes you like the wonderful women of the Old Testament. And, you know, I kind of go through that because one of the things that I come to realize is that even while women are familiar with those six verses, it seems like that men are more familiar with those six verses than they are with verse 7. Verse 7 addresses the men. And it begins with the word likewise, or husbands likewise. That is, what he's telling us is, just as women, our wives, have God-given duties and responsibilities, he says, guys, you do too. You have some responsibilities, you have some duties, and in the exact same way that God expects women to be, in this exact same way, you are to live up to your responsibilities, to your duties. And I've got to tell you, because of men failing to do this, it's been my observation that there are a lot of Christian women who are unhappy. There are a lot of Christian women who are disappointed and who are frustrated simply because men do not take very seriously what Peter says in verse 7. And because of that, because of men not doing that, women many times feel just at the end of their rope. Women feel, many Christian women feel that, well, you know, it just seems like, just everything is falling apart. And a lot of women have just a great deal of complaints. You know, some of the common complaints that women, and I'm not talking just about women in the world. I'm talking about women in the church. I'm talking about good, godly Christian women who are striving their very best to live up to the things that are said in the first six verses, still have some common complaints about their husbands. And guys, it should not be so. You know, these things that Peter said in verse 7, they're as much as of our Christian obligation as being baptized. They're as much of our Christian obligation that we have in doing those things as in worshiping in spirit and in truth. These things are our responsibility. And when we're not living up to that, it causes our wives to become disenchanted. It causes them to become unhappy and frustrated and disappointed. And as though we're not listening to their complaints. Now, some common complaints that women have is that their husbands ignore them. They're just simply not in tune, not in touch with them. And they just simply come in and they've got their lives and wives have theirs. They just kind of ignore them. And then another complaint is that, well, you know, my husband, he doesn't remember dates. And guys act as though this is nothing important. What do you mean, you know, forgetting an anniversary, forgetting a birthday, forgetting this or forgetting that? It is important. These are common complaints that women have, even among Christian women. And another complaint is that they're taken for granted. They always know that I'm going to be there. They always know that I'm going to prepare a meal. They always know that I'm going to have the shirts washed and ironed. They just take it for granted. Not one time do they say thank you. Not one time do they say I appreciate you. Not one time do they spend any time acknowledging what I do. They just simply take it for granted. Another complaint is that, well, I'm just his mate. And you know, as long as everything is running well around the household, he's happy because all he wants is a mate. He just wants somebody to take care of him. And there's certainly no romance. That's a common complaint that wives have. And just simply, you know, no romance here, no dates, no hand-holding, no affection. Just come in from work and just flop down on the couch and grab that beloved remote, you know, and just kind of surf there until you fall asleep. And you just go to snoring on the couch, and finally you wake up about 11 or 12 and go to bed after everybody else has gone to bed. And that's just a sort of a typical complaint. But another complaint is that wives think that all their husband wants is another mother. Just somebody to, you know, they can kind of complain to and take their troubles to and can kind of comfort them and kiss away their hurt and just make everything seem to be all right. These are just some common complaints that wives have. And I'm going to tell you one of the reasons why there are so many of these complaints, guys, is we're just simply not striving to live up to what Peter said in one little verse. I was reading one time where a wife went to the preacher and was complaining about her husband. Been married for a few years and she's just making all kinds of complaints to the preacher. The preacher said, well, now you do know, don't you, sister, that when you got married, you took him for better or for worse. And she said, yeah, I understand that, but it's a lot worse than I took him for. That's just a complaint that some ladies have. I'll tell you what I'm about to put up now. You may think I've made it up. I didn't make it up. But it's almost as if some wives have, they've gone out to a dating agency and they've just gotten somebody that you just can't believe that they got. It's like this. This fellow advertised himself as TJ from Missouri. He said, I'm looking for a girl named Julie. Got her tattooed right there. He said, it's just easier that way. I got this Julie tattoo last year and would prefer not to deal with it. Or, if you want to change your name, that's cool. Mm-hmm. You see him pulling the hair out, you know. Or maybe it's Marcus here from southern Idaho. He said, ever drink paint thinner? Don't. Trust me. It's a bad idea. He said, I'm a fun-loving guy who knows a few magic tricks. You want to get him, ladies? It'll make you pull your hair out. Or what about Earl from West Virginia? He said, I deal in reality, and the reality is that I'm ready for love. Well, I can chop lots of wood and can even climb a grease pole. I keep in shape by chasing chickens around my backyard. And I keep myself clean and take baths weekly. Do you know him? You see, this is kind of the frustrations, you know, guys, that wise, good, godly women who spend their lives raising our children and teaching our children and being there for, these are some of the problems that, that causes them to be sometimes just at wit's end, and just almost at the end of their rope. Well, let's go back to our passage there in 1 Peter. Because what Peter is doing there in verse 7 is really describing for us, guys, the kind of wives that the kind of husbands that our wives need. The kind of husbands that we ought to be to our wives. If we just take that little verse there and just break it down and begin to look at it and begin to apply it, we're going to provide a great deal of family health and happiness. And the family health and happiness that God expects there to be in a marriage. Husbands, likewise, dwell with them with understanding, giving honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers may not be hindered. Let's break that down and look at four little points that we can draw out of that, guys, and let's try to make some applications. And let's try to be the kind of husbands that our wives deserve, that they need, and that God expects us to provide for them. Number one, let's in the first place recognize that the kind of husband that our wife needs is a husband who dwells with her. Isn't that how the verse begins? Wives need husbands who dwell with them. And that idea is reside, live with, cohabitate with her. Now, that may sound to be simple. That may sound to be a no-brainer. But just stop and think about something. Think about all that involves, and think about all that suggests. You know, I remind people that of all the things that God created, you know, every time God would finish a day of creation, He would look at His creation and He would say, you know, this is good. And at the end of it all, God looked at His creation in Genesis 1 and He said, this is very good. But then you get into Genesis chapter 2 and you find out that God created something that He looked upon and He said, it's not good. And that's in Genesis 2 and verse 18 where God said, it is not good for a man to be alone. And based upon that backdrop, God created a woman, God created for man a companion. And in a marriage, there is to be this thing known as companionship. Malachi 2 and verse 14 says, she is your wife by companion. And I got to tell you, that suggests exactly what Peter is talking about here. That in a marriage relationship, we form a companionship. And you're not going to be able to fulfill that companionship unless you do what Peter said, and that is dwell with her. You are her companion. She is your companion. That means that your work is not your companion. That means your dog or your cat is not your companion. That means that your hobby or your toys or your friends are not your companion, guys. Your wife is your companion. Marriage is God's answer to loneliness. Loneliness is that which erodes the human spirit. And God said, I'm going to address that, and here's how I'm going to address it. I'm going to create for man his companion. So guys, dwell with her. She is your companion. You have formed this companionship. And I got to tell you, it's sad to say, but there are many married women who are lonely who do not enjoy this companionship because their husbands are not dwelling with them. And this is a sad refrain. You know, you go back to Genesis 2 and verse 24, where God said a man would leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife. Jesus quotes that in Matthew chapter 19 and verse 5. And he says there, you know, no longer two, but what, you know, what God has joined together, man shall leave father and mother and be joined to his wife. They're no longer two, but one flesh. You know, in both the Hebrew and in the Greek, the words that have been translated, be joined, suggest the idea of cementing or gluing together, a bonding together. That's how close this companionship is. It is an inseparable bond. Yes, it emphasizes the permanency of marriage. But at the same time, fellas, I have to tell you, it calls out those husbands who seem to think that it's okay to act single. It's not okay to act single. You have formed an inseparable bond, and your wife is your companion. You're not to spend all of your time in your boyish games. It's wrong to be flirtatious with women. You have formed this relationship. You be a companion. You dwell with her. And I'll tell you something else that calls out. That calls out those men who constantly come home late without calling, and the wife is there wondering, where on earth is he? Am I going to be able to expect him to come home for supper? If not for supper, perhaps bedtime? You dwell with her. You have formed this companionship. This is what wives need. Companionship answers this lonely feeling that people have within their heart. She needs to know where you are. And you must not ignore her needs and what she would like to do and what she desires and what she wants. This is just simply a husband who loves his wife. Ephesians 5 and verse 25, a husband is to love his wife as Christ loved the church and gave himself for it. A husband who loves his wife as Christ loves the church will dwell with her. You drop on down a few verses in Ephesians 5 and you find that a man is to love his wife as his own body. Verse 28, and he goes on to say, you nourish and cherish your own body. You know how to take care of your body. I tell people, you know, I don't know of a man on the face of God's earth that does not know how to nourish and cherish his own body. You let him get out here and get injured on something, and man, I tell you, he'll milk that thing for all he's worth. You know, I can't. I'm hurt. You know, he's nourishing and cherishing his body. Well, that's what God says, fellas, we are to do with our wives. But we're not going to be doing that if we fail to dwell with them. Every good, let alone every great marriage, begins right here. Men must initiate, and I know this is going to shock some of you, but men must initiate love within the home. Husbands, love your wife. Men, initiate that. You know, 1 John 4 and verse 19 says that we, the church, we love Him that is the Christ, the head, our Savior. We love Him because He first loved us. This love that is returned to our Lord was initiated by Him. And we're reciprocating that love. And guys, this is where it begins. You love your wives. You initiate that. And you dwell with her. This is what the Scripture calls upon us to do. And I'll tell you, and when I say do, that's exactly what I mean. I'm not talking about just saying, I love you, dear. Love is not spelled in just words. It is. And I'll tell you something else. Love is not spelled T-H-I-N-G-S. I'm giving you all of these things. Love is spelled T-I-M-E in a marriage relationship. You dwell with her. And let's go on. Let's go on in our text here as we consider something else from that verse. A husband is to be a man who understands her. That's the kind of husband your wife needs. An understanding man. Now, I'll tell you now, Men need to understand a lot of things about marriage. There's no question about that. We need to understand that marriage is a lifetime commitment. Matthew 19 and verse 6. What God has joined together, let not man separate. That's something we need to understand. And fellas, we need to understand that when we stand before God and we make the vow, till death we do part, that's something we've got to mean with all of our heart because we're bound to that. We've got to understand that. Wives need a man who understands that. That's a man that she can trust. Wives need a husband who understands the role of headship. Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 23, a man is to be the head of his wife. Do we understand that? A wife needs an understanding husband who understands that being the head in a family is not the CEO of a business. A man who is the head of his family is not the first sergeant in a platoon of soldiers. A man who is the head of his wife is not someone who is the king of his castle. And everybody in the family, including the little lady, is to bow down and grovel at my every beck and call. I was reading about a lady who married a man that after they were married, he actually wrote out a list of duties and responsibilities that she had. And he told everything that she was to do. This is her job, this is her job, this is her job, this is expected of you, and yada yada, right on down the line. And he would walk around, you know, just demanding that these things be done. Well, I'm going to tell you what began to happen is this woman began to resent her husband, and that resentment even boiled over into hate. She just despised being around him. He's nothing but just a demanding force in that family. Well, the man eventually died, and she actually felt a sense of relief. He's gone. Oh, I just feel like a bird let out of a cage. A couple of years later, she met another man who showered her with love and with affection. And they married, and it just seemed as though they were on a perpetual honeymoon. He could not seem to do enough for her. He could not seem to elevate her high enough. And he just doted on her. And they had a happy relationship. One day she was going through a bureau drawer and she found that list of duties that were written out by her first husband. And she took them out and she read them and she realized that every one of these duties that were demanded by her first husband that she is now lovingly doing for her second husband. Why is that? Because he understood headship. He understood that he's not a CEO. And he understood that he's not a drill sergeant. He understood that he's not some pseudo-king of his castle, that he was a loving leader in that family. And when he met that responsibility, she gladly and lovingly responded. Headship is not merely, is really not at all a physical and emotional control. It is loving leadership. It's not degrading. It's not putting down a wife. It's kind and it's compassionate and it's fair. That's the kind of husband wives need, deserve, and God demands. You know, there are some men who have absolutely no qualms about spending all kinds of money on their hobbies and their toys, their fishing equipment, their hunting equipment, their golf clubs, their this and their that. But yet when the wife wants to buy a pair of shoes or she wants to buy a dress, no, we can't afford it. And if you buy that, you're going to have to see how you can pay for it. That's not loving leadership. That, ladies and gentlemen, is not understanding a wife. A man needs to understand his wife. He needs to understand also within this context that she is the weaker vessel. Isn't that what Peter says? Well, husbands dwell with them with understanding, giving honor to the wife as the weaker vessel. Now, I'll tell you what I'm not going to do here. I'm not going to wade into some useless and foolish argument as to whether all women are physically weaker than all men. If we do that, we miss the point of what Peter is saying here. Peter is actually telling men, you need to understand that your wife is a woman. You need to understand that your wife is a woman and not a man. She is the weaker vessel. That is, the idea is that she is fragile, she is precious, she is tender, she is your possession, and you protect her. And you dwell with her understanding just how fragile she is. The emphasis is upon being a woman, being feminine. She don't act like, she don't think like a man. And you can't expect that. You've got to understand that there are differences. She's a woman. She's the way, and I tell you, I don't know about you, but I'm one man that's thankful for the difference. You know, what's the French say? Vive la différence. I'm thankful for that. There is a difference here, and men need to understand that. And men need to treat their wives, recognizing that there is this difference. She don't think like I do. She don't respond like I do. She is an emotional creature. And I'm going to treat her as such. She's fragile. She's my vessel. And I want to treat her that way. Guys, what this means is that I'm going to do the little things that maybe a man don't understand, but a wife does. A wife understands those little things, those sweet words, those tender touches, and those compliments. He understands that she's a weaker vessel, that she is a woman. And he honors that. And that word honor means esteem of the highest degree. Because she is that special creation that God made to answer the problem of loneliness. Guys, these are the kinds of husbands and wives need, and they deserve, and that God demands. But furthermore, the wife needs a husband who is intimate with her. You know, this goes along with giving honor to the weaker vessel. You know, Matthew 19 and verse 5, we become one flesh. I believe if husbands truly understood wives as women, they would understand perhaps more fully this idea of one flesh. It doesn't just mean the marriage bed, fellas. It goes much deeper than that. It means husbands and wives become soulmates, best friends. And as a result of this intimacy, as a result of this one flesh, she feels loved and she feels accepted and she feels close to her husband. Because of this intimacy. You know, there's a passage in the book of Genesis in chapter 2, in verse 25 actually, that sometimes we just kind of read over and almost act embarrassed that it's even there. And we don't really even spend some time thinking about it. And that's the verse that says that both the man and his wife, the husband and wife, were naked and they were not ashamed. You know, admit it. Don't they kind of give us just a little bit of anxiety? You know, what's that mean? You know, what's going on here? But you know, when you stop and think about it, that's a very profound statement that we read. Because it's talking about a husband and wife. It's talking about a marriage relationship. And a marriage relationship, my brothers and sisters, is an arena where a husband and wife, yes, they bear all. They bear their soul, they bear their spirit, and they bear their body. This is a time when they're vulnerable to each other. And it's also an arena where they can feel loved and accepted and never afraid and never ashamed. Are we providing that atmosphere? One recent poll said 84% of women do not feel they do not have intimacy in their marriage. Is there the marriage bed? Yes, but there's not this feeling of intimacy. 84%. 83% of that same poll said that 83% of women feel that their husbands don't even have a clue as to what their basic emotional needs are.
You see, what we need to understand is, to women, marriage without emotional intimacy. Marriage without emotional intimacy to women is empty. It's unfulfilling. It's unrewarding. I don't care what goes on in the bedroom. There's got to be this emotional attachment. There's got to be this emotional intimacy. And I'll tell you, this is why. This is why, ladies and gentlemen, some women are drawn to others who are not her husband, not because it's physical, but because he is providing for her and meeting her emotional needs. Do you realize that very few adulterous affairs actually begin with the physical? Some do, but not many. Most began by someone supplying the emotional intimacy that's lacking at home. Let me ask you, husband, do you know what it is that gives your wife this emotional intimacy that she desires? Do you know? Do you know how to provide it? Do you know what makes her sad? Do you know what makes her happy? Do you know what makes her secure? Do you know what it is that makes her insecure? Do you know what she likes and what she dislikes? Do you know what her dreams are? This is what we're talking about. We talk about one flesh. I'm telling you, we miss the boat entirely when the only thing that we think about is the physical. It goes much deeper than that. We become one in thought and intent. And this is where we often fail to give to our husbands, or give to our wives, the kind of husbands that they need. And finally, a wife needs a husband who is willing to provide spiritual leadership. Being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers may not be hindered. Marriage, I'm going to tell you something right now, is not complete. No marriage is complete unless both the husband and the wife genuinely love God. They'll love each other, yes, but if they genuinely love God, then you have a fulfilling and rewarding marriage. And the reason that I say that is because, according to this verse, marriage is primarily a spiritual relationship. And that's what a lot of people don't understand. That's what a lot of people don't recognize. It is primarily a spiritual relationship. And based upon that, sadly, guys, often what's lacking in families are husbands who are spiritual leaders. You can't emphasize enough the value of a man stepping up and becoming the spiritual leader in his family. He may be able to provide all kinds of things. He may be able to provide all kinds of physical security. This is true. But when you look at this verse, you find that there are two things that are assumed in this verse. Look at it again. I know you further in the back, you said perhaps harder it is to read this small font. But there are two things implied in this verse. Number one, that both the husband and the wife are Christians. And it implies also that both the husband and wife pray together. Now that is suggested in that verse. And so, and I'm going to tell you something. All wives need husbands who provide leadership in the areas of spirituality, who lead the family in Bible study, lead the family in worship, lead the family in prayers. Wives need husbands who help her be faithful to God. Wives need husbands who help her raise the children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. These are the kind of husbands our wives need. A husband who leads the family in the paths of righteousness. Godly homes are no accident.
You don't just throw people together and shake them up, throw them out, up pops a godly family. It takes effort. It takes work. It takes commitment on the part of both. But what I want to say as I conclude these thoughts this morning, my friends, is that whenever there are problems within families, very often the problems within those families can be connected directly to the heads of those families. That's why, guys, we got to take it serious. You know, it's sad when you look out at many churches of Christ and you see not only are the membership composed of older people, but you're finding more and more congregations where the membership is composed of primarily women. And it's because men are not living up to the commitment that God expects for them to make. And really, the commitment that they have made. And so we've got to take it serious. If we're going to be the kind of men, the kind of Christians that we ought to be, we're going to be the kind of husbands that our wives deserve, that God demands, and that she needs. So let's step it up and be what we ought to be. And that begins with becoming a Christian. Are there those in this assembly this morning who are not what they ought to be because they're not Christians? They've not committed themselves to loving and to serving God, who loved you so much that He permitted His Son to die to provide a sacrifice for your sins, that you can have fellowship with God, you can have a relationship with God through belief, repentance, confession, and baptism, and then being raised to walk in newness of life. And then be the kind of Christian that God demands that you be. Be faithful unto death. And I promise you that in the course of that, you will, if you're living up to your commitment, provide for your husband the kind of wife that you need to be, and provide for your wife the kind of husband that you need to be. You're subject to the invitation. Why don't you come right now as together we stand.